Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 98.
Greetings. Welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I am your host, Don Cardenas, and today I have another shuffle interview for you all. I am joined by returning guests and awesome writer and awesome dude, Mario Candelaria. Mario, thank you for coming back on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so you recently released your creator-owned series, Killcella, that's just kind of kicking all kinds of ass lately, and a bunch of other cool stuff that's happening. But before we get into that, I got to ask you, comics, coffee, metal, or anything in between, what are you digging lately?
That's a great question. I mean, I've been watching a lot of TV since it's the wintertime, and I have to say, I don't know if you've got a chance to check this out, but Fleischman is in Trouble on Hulu is a really good show.
Fleischman is, I have never heard of that.
Yeah, it's based on a novel. I think it's a novel from the same name. And I forgot the author's name, I apologize, but she's the showrunner for the show. And she used to be a celebrity, like a celebrity profiler columnist for, I want to say, the New York Times. But yeah, it's a show. It takes place in the year 2016 about a divorced man whose wife unexpectedly abandoned the children at his house and how that's turned his life upside down.
Oh, okay. That sounds interesting for sure. It is the season for, like, you know, catching up on TV and all that.
Yeah.
A little more difficult over here since we still got the kiddos. There's not too many shows we can watch while they're up and awake. But we're definitely trying to make, like, we just recently finished She-Hulk, and that was, like, granted, that's still relatively new in the grand scheme of things, but it was, you know, pretty old hat by the time we got to it in terms of how fast things are moving these days. But yeah, the Fleischman show, okay, I'll make sure I put that down on my list there.
Don't watch that with the kids.
Oh, no, I think the only thing we get to watch that we also really enjoy with the kids, was right now we're on Brooklyn Nine-Nine again.
Okay,
so,
nice.
You know, they're you know, granted, there's definitely, you know, not kid-friendly material in there, but most of it goes faster over their heads, and they just like dancing to the theme song, so.
No, yeah. That's a pretty clean show, but Fleischman's Trouble is not. I mean, he's a newly divorced guy in New York who just discovered the apps, as they like to say, capital T, capital A, the apps. And so there's a montage of I really like the cinematography and how they project what he's looking at on his phone while just talking to other people in his life. And he's just going through Tinder or receiving messages from women, and it's just like, oh yeah, like he's talking, but you can see what he's looking at. It's like, okay, that's it makes you wonder if when you're at the red light and you see people staring at their phone, if that's what they're seeing instead of going on green.
Probably 100%. Yeah. Awesome. Any other shows you've been really digging?
You know, I dove all in on House of the Dragon. I don't know if you checked that one out.
I haven't, but like with Game of Thrones, like I'm a fan of the books, and I just never, by the time I would have been able to get to the show, I've heard enough things about how fast it went downhill towards the end, and also a lot of the things they added that I wasn't really cool with. But I do like listening to like recaps and theory videos, and like, so I've been actually listening to like recap episodes, kind of like discussing and explaining the episodes of House of the Dragon. So I haven't actually seen it.
Okay. Who's your recap?
Was it Alt Shift FX? Is it?
Okay. Okay. I'm a Ringer guy for okay. House of the Dragon. I don't know if you check out.
It's more of an explain. So they kind of like detail the plot, and like he'll kind of say, point out differences between what's happened in the books versus what's happening here and what that means and things like that. So even though, you know, me being a fan of the books, I know what happens to most of these characters already. It's kind of cool. I mean, it looks like it's a pretty cool show, but yeah, I just haven't had the time to sit down and watch it properly. So, you know, listening to those types of things, it's kind of like an audiobook situation. I can tune that out a little bit and all that. So,
and you said that's Alt Shift X.
Yeah, I believe it's Alt Shift X.
Nice.
And I've also been going through In Deep Geek.
In Deep Geek. Okay.
He has a lot of older videos where he was really going through a lot of the Thrones books and movies and show, and kind of like doing a lot of comparisons, doing a lot of like theories on things, which was kind of interesting because there's a lot of aspects of the books where I'm like, you know, I find out they didn't cover that in the show or whatever. And then it kind of like makes me think about, oh, what, how's that going to happen in the books? Because based on how the show ended, there's a lot of things that they did not address that could drastically change the outcome of everything. So, those have been kind of what's been playing, in the background while I'm doing stuff.
See, I wonder if a lot of that is they had great source material to work from in the front and in the beginning. And of course, over the 8 years, they're hoping like, all right, can we get these final books to wrap this whole thing up? And they just never came.
It seems like, you know, and just, but judging by the, you know, people's reactions and comments and things I see from these videos, it really feels like they screwed the pooch quite a bit on a lot of things.
I kind of want to throw some cold water on that because my wife never read the books, never watched the show until maybe like the last season or second last season. And a lot of the things let me rewind a little bit. I started watching the final season, and then she finally came around. She's like, okay, I'll watch it. So at the same time, as I'm watching week to week, she was doing an epic rewatch with me in between episodes. So she was seeing the final episodes live, but then, you know, we're going back and starting over from, you know, one all the way on up. And a lot of the things that they talk about in that show were things that were brought up earlier in the series. So it's funny because she would see people complaining on Twitter and she's just like, do you even watch the show, bro? They literally said that in season two that this was going to happen. So I don't know. It reminds me of the SNL sketch with Fred Armisen and I want to say Kristen Wiig, where they're singing Christmas songs together on Weekend Update. I don't know if you remember that. Some of it is just like they have no idea what they're singing. They're just riffing off each other. But then there'd be one good song that they would be in perfect harmony. But then the second verse would just be improvised at the live on the spot.
I think, again, this is me, you know, just having the books as my reference and seeing how things played out post where there's books written. I could definitely see why people think it's not as good. And I've seen like, you know, the nitpicking of certain things and all that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, for me, I'm also like, but the books are the books. I mean, that's not going to change what, you know, George is going to be doing in the books. If anything, maybe it gives him an idea. I doubt it does, because I'm sure he's set in what he's going to do. But maybe it gives him an idea of like, oh, maybe that wasn't a good idea, seeing how that all played out.
Yeah.
But like, there's so many things like, and there's like, you know, the young Griff and John Connington stuff that kind of just got cast aside.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like there's all the stuff in Dorne. Like Dorne is, it seems like in the movies and in the movie, I keep saying movies, in the show, and based on these recaps and stuff like that, that Dorne was pretty much, you know, kneecapped like any other storylines. And there's so much more stuff going on there than what's being shown in the show and things like that. So it's like, there's just a lot of stuff like that's just, I just think that it's just going to be fine. Like, I guess I can see why some people will complain about certain aspects, like the whole Daenerys going crazy and all that in the end and all that. But I think it's less what happened, more like how they did it. Because again, it's all context, but you know, there's some videos I've seen where they kind of point out how things are just like not good the way they do things. But that's, you know, that's like nitpicky stuff. And, you know, but that's kind of the nerdy shit we all get down on too sometimes, you know.
You have to. I mean, you know, especially if it's something that you like and you want to say, hey, you know, where's the representation or the reproduction of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, I'm doing the same, you know, I did the same thing a while ago with the Lord of the Rings stuff. And then I was catching up on the Rings of Power show and all that, where my wife and I were watching that because she likes Lord of the Rings a lot. And the thing about the Rings of Power for me is like, I could take it or leave it. There's the changes they've made to the characters and the characterizations of a lot of the main people. I'm like, ah, it doesn't really fit. Like, I'm not expecting it to be a one to, like, I wasn't expecting it to be like a prequel to Peter Jackson's version. But even in the book versions, from what I've read, like, this doesn't ring as true, or it doesn't feel like these are the same characters. So one of the things I've been doing is there's one of these Tolkien channels that him and this guy and his friend who are doing the episode recap, they just hate the show. They fucking hate the show.
Yeah.
But to their credit, it's not like, oh, there's no black dwarves. Like, no, it's just they really hate the writing. They really hate the characterizations. So it's like good old fashioned nerd ranting that we just kind of miss that these days. You know, everything's like laced in racism or sexism. And this is just good old fashioned. It's not like the books. It has nothing to do with skin colors. It has nothing to do with genders. It is just they don't like how their favorite characters are being written. Like, one of his favorite characters, one of the guy's favorite characters was Galadriel's brother, and he's kind of just really not presented the best way in the show, and he is just fucking livid about it. But again, it's done in that, it just comes off as a good old-fashioned nerd rant, man, and it's kind of nice to, like, it's weird saying this, but it's just kind of nice to, like, just to know those still exist, you know?
They always lose me when someone says that whatever happened killed their childhood. I'm like, bro, your memories are still there. It's not a crisis wave erasing your childhood.
Yeah. And, I will give this guy credit and his friend credit for, it's Men of the West is the name of the YouTube channel.
Men of the West. Okay.
And I'll give him the credit. Like, cause they never like say like they ruined the books for me. It's just like, no, the books. His argument is like, the books have it all there for you. How could you be this bad at it? Which they've brought up some good points, I would say, but for me, I don't have enough of an emotional attachment to this that stories of Tolkien's work as I did to the original Lord of the Rings. So I'm just like, yeah, it's a fine show. I wish the episodes were shorter. They didn't really need to be that long, but you know, it's fine.
The only time for me in my life that ever happened scarred me very young, and it was I was a fan of the Toxic Crusaders. I don't know if you remember that cartoon.
Yes, yes.
And I remember being very young. I was in the video store and I saw the box for the Toxic Avenger. And I begged my mom to get it. And she, because I was like, oh, Toxic, what? There's a movie? Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I got it and it was 100,000% not appropriate for a kid. And I got hit for that. Like, what the fuck? My mom's like, I got spanked for taking out this video like I knew. And ever since then, I was like, you know what? Whatever exists and is being adapted, it is what it is.
Yeah, that's so crazy to me that they made a cartoon show. They had a cartoon for the RoboCop, and it's like, oh my God. But I remember, I remember my dad taking us to see RoboCop 2 in the theater. I was I was like 7 or 8.
Junkie at robot? The time.
Yeah, and I'm like watching like junkie robots and like, you know, and just like, it's just insane. Like the opening with the guy getting electrocuted in the car. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, Dad, like, cool. But then there's a cartoon for fucking RoboCop.
I remember I was talking to my wife just recently, like last week, about if certain movies are appropriate for kids. And I was like, I grew up as a little child watching RoboCop, and RoboCop shot a guy in the dick.
Yeah.
And I was like,
whenever I see that shirt pop up on social media somewhere, like it's just, you know, the quote saying, hey, remember when RoboCop shot that dude in the dick? Like, I want that shirt or a coffee mug of that, but I can't obviously, at least not
to my kids. Right?
Yeah. My wife and I, we've kind of had the similar conversations lately too, because, you know, as my daughter's almost 7 in a few months, like, we're like, what's appropriate for her? We're like, we're trying to figure this out, because there's a couple movies that have come out like on Disney and stuff that are, you know, firmly the PG section, like Turning Red and stuff like that, where it kind of deals with more, you know, preteen type emotions and stuff like that. And it's like, well, is that a, you know, is she cool with that? Like, we were fine with her watching it and all that, but we just kind of started that discussion of like, what is appropriate for her now? Because, man, my family, you know, I grew up with a hot box in the house.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
And if you don't, kiddos, if you don't know what a hot box is, there used to be a time when the guy who came to install your cable, if you slipped him a little bit more money, he gave you a box and did a little crissy crossy with some wires, and you got all the channels. And I meant all the channels.
All 92.
all the channels intended for not intended for children. So there were plenty of, like, you know, just late night, just watching HBO way too late, or Cinemax, or mm-hmm. Showtime, or whatever, and catching stuff like Toxic Avenger and all these weird slasher horror movies and things like that. And I'm like, you know, not even in the double digits of my age.
Of course.
You know? So I'm like, well, I'm not going to sit here and say I turned out fine because of that. But I'm also like, I don't think that was directly resulting in to what's wrong with me. So not that I want my kids to see that, but it's like, okay, where is the line though? Where do we find that line? So it's just, it's been an interesting, especially these days. Like, it's a lot of the younger, a lot of the media skewed to younger kids. They deal with a lot more things, a lot of heavier things and stuff like that. And so I kind of think like, it just broaches that topic of like, what ultimately I'm just trying to figure out, when can I show my kids Monster Squad, you know? So, and I'm sure if I put it on, my daughter would absolutely love it. She loves monsters and all that. And my 3-year-old son will probably be scared shitless, but yeah, you know, it's just those questions you, as a parent, you kind of like realize like, oh, like, both my parents, you know, worked all the time and all that. So I was very much, you know, not necessarily a latchkey kid, because my grandma lived with us and she would be home, but like, she left us alone. You know, at a certain age, she's left us alone. So like, I just did what we wanted to do for so long. So it's like, all right, that's definitely not the case here. So how do we do that? How do we handle this? So,
I mean, that's a great thing that you said, because you got to think that helps with the development, not just personality, but also like, you live and you learn, right? If, I mean, how do you feel if someone's staring over your shoulder watching what you do all the time? You're not going to be your true authentic self, I feel. And
yeah,
you know, kids are probably like that, and then they develop and they get to see what they like, what they don't like, their interests, without, you know, mm-hmm. the fear of someone looking over them, or, you know, or even just judgment. But yeah, I mean, there is a fine line. The movie we're thinking of was Violent Night, the new Christmas action movie.
Ah.
Okay. And I was like, there's no sex, there's no nudity, a little bit of bad language, violence, but not insane violence. Nobody getting shot in the dick this one. But, you know, it's like, at what age is it appropriate for someone to see that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely just one of those, especially a movie like that, where it's like, okay, it doesn't have, like, you know, there's no like intense gore. There's no, it's just, you know, there's people getting killed, people fighting and stuff like that. And then, you know, one day, you know, we got Disney on and my daughter's watching like the old Mickey shorts or whatever. And, you know, there's a short where Donald Duck literally goes to a radio station to beat up some lady giving a recipe.
Okay.
And you hear her getting her ass kicked over the radio. And it's like, all right, well. Or, you know, some old Looney Tunes will come on or something, and it's just like, oh wow, they're still playing that one. That one's kind of not you know, sensitive to certain groups. So it's like, oh boy, well, you know, this stuff's around. It's just kind of figuring out, like, you know, just, yeah, it's just a tricky situation with all this stuff, and it's only gonna get worse for sure.
That's funny.
Anyway. Enough about all that. Enough about the things we've been enjoying, because I want to talk about something I've been enjoying, and that is your independent comic series, Killchella, from Scout Comics. I know it was a long, hard road for you to get it released. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears put into this book, and I'm hoping, from what appears, that the reception has been amazing and just well worth the wait. Can you tell everybody about Killchella, just in case they don't know?
Yeah, Killchella is a 4-issue slasher set at a music festival. That's pretty much what it boils down to, right? I think I saw a review that says that it's all the people you want to hate get killed. I'm like, all right, that's sure. Let's do that. It's about a group of friends who go out to a music festival, and the festival turns out to be a sacrificial ritual that an insane pop star gets a bunch of her fanatic fans to, you know, help her out with. I mean, it gets a little weird when it gets to the end. I'm not going to spoil things. It's not just, you know, straightforward, but I'm really happy with the reception we've gotten. Even just today, I was reaching out to retailers about issue 3, which is currently in previews. And I think issue 4 comes in a couple of weeks. That's the final issue, you know, for pre-order. But I'm happy. Like you alluded to, it's been a long road for us. And it's funny, when it came out, I didn't like jump out for joy or anything like that. I just withdrew a little bit and I sat back and just enjoyed the moment, if that makes sense.
No, totally. I think a smart way for you to do that, because, you know, given the intense pressure you probably felt upon having it finally out after all these things. And even then, there's the whole, I'm forgetting the exact issue, but there's like another delay at the last second with the printing. There's like a truck got damaged or something. I forget exactly what it was.
They said it was the hurricane. The hurricane delayed production because where the printer is where Hurricane Ian hit.
Yes. So I imagined when I heard about that, I just kind of imagined you just like cackling like a maniacal laugh, like, of course this is what happens. You know, not that you're being insensitive to anyone who's actually, you know, direly affected by the hurricane and all that. It's just the comedy of errors that it seems to like have conspired against you to like get this book out. But it's out now, and like I said, I have not seen a non-glowing comment about it from anywhere I've seen. I've read the 3 issues myself. You sent them to me so generously, and yeah, it's just really, really good. I mean, it's something that definitely has a really fun premise, but it really delivers on it. And I, you know, with the 4th issue coming out, which I have not read and I can't wait to read and get, is just, I'm really waiting for it, because shit got pretty dire towards the end of the 3rd issue.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely waiting for that final act to see how everything pans out for, or doesn't, for everybody.
Thank you. I mean, I wasn't really a horror person until like just about maybe like 2019 or so. I think I famously tell everybody that. I always grown up watching action movies and comedies. Those are my main things. And, I didn't start watching horror until I got the AMC pass. We can see like 3 movies a week for a flat fee a month. And, once I got that, I started branching out to see more movies. So I'm like, I'm going to take advantage of, you know, this pass, especially with my wife and not having different work schedules then, or I hope my boss isn't listening. I would dip out of the office at like 2:00 and I'm like, all right, you know, I'm creatively, I'm fried. Let me go to the movie theater down the street, watch a movie, and then come back to work and then, you know, see what that does. I would see anything and everything under the sun. As I started watching more horror stuff, I was like, okay, there's, you know, I see what people are into. I mean, when it was just my own flat money, I would be like, all right, let me just get something that'll make me laugh. I mean, let me just get some stupid popcorn flick. Right. But, I really enjoyed getting into it more. And of course, you know, once I started in enjoying it a lot more, I did deep dives into, you know, a lot of the classics, you know, your John Carpenter, even going out to the old country, seeing the stuff that they're doing in Italy, going further out, seeing the horror that they're doing in Japan, not just the American remakes I was watching or I was aware of, but really, you know, getting into the weeds of it. You know, horror comics too. I mean, I've read The Walking Dead, but, you know, seeing this, like, Witches that Scott Snyder did, you know, trying to find more obscure stuff as well. It's fun to see how it can be done and how it can be done across different mediums too. I mean, even old, some scary fiction podcasts I was downloading a while back, where it's just, you know, stories being told and what they do with the storytelling and the sound effects. Oh, I don't know if you saw this movie, Scare Me by Josh Rubin.
No, I have not.
Yeah. That Josh Rubin, Chris Redd from SNL, and Aya Cash from You're the Worst. It's a horror movie, but it's kind of a comedy because you got a bunch of comedians. But that's a movie that's done with everybody telling scary stories, and just what they do with their voices and the audio mixing and the lighting and such. It's not like jump out horror, but it's a way that, like, if you're telling a scary story, how you would embellish or kind of get into it.
That sounds cool. Yeah, for sure.
Hey there, do you like comics? How about hearing from creators who make comics? Then welcome to No Capes, the show where we talk about creator-owned comics with creators who own comics. Think about it like a book club for the super rad. Each week I sit down with a new fellow comics creator, and we pick a book with both read and love and gush about it for an hour, as well as our love for the craft in general. Does that sound good to you? Then look for No Capes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and all those good podcast places, and at No Capes Show on all social media. See you there.
Well, I think it was really cool that you kind of like went and basically did a bunch of homework. And it shows in the book. It definitely is a very, very effective horror comic. And, you know, not to like retread or bring it up unnecessarily, but you mentioned Walking Dead, and to me, like reading that and looking back at it, it's more of a drama book than a horror book, to be honest, especially as it got, you know, later issues, and it got a little bit longer in its lifespan. And that's a dig at that, because it was still a great book done really well. But to just have that visceral nature of things, you know, I think that's what was missing after a while out of that book. And that's something that, you know, Coachella really, really, really does. Lautaro's, is it Lautaro? Am I saying their name correctly?
I believe so.
You know, their art is just fantastic for the book, because it has that nice, clean kind of open line that I think really is kind of underrepresented, like in horror stuff, because there's something, I guess there's that dichotomy between like just seeing something that would considerably, you know, would usually be used for books that were depicting just like attractive things and people and more bright, airy type stuff, and it being used for horror. There's a number of cartoonists who have like a more cartoony style where I'm like, no, I would love to see you do horror, because that would be so weird. I think it would work really well just to have like, you know, like your mutual buddy like Joe Hunter, like seeing him do like a horror book with like blood and guts and stuff like that, like that would be really neat. I think that would be really, really cool to see, just because it's just not something you have seen before, you know. Not to you know, dig on anyone who does a more, you know, I guess, horror style when you think about horror, because, you know, I've drawn plenty of horror. I'm still drawing plenty of horror comics. And it's, you know, I'm definitely not, I would say, cartoony, but yeah, it's just, I like seeing that kind of contrast with everything. And I think it all works together really, really well.
Thank you. I think a lot of it is, like I said, my preferences, of course, were always, you know, big comedies and action. And a lot of it is like movies like Lethal Weapon, right? You have to learn to care about the characters. So that way, when something happens to them, you know, you have a little bit more of a reaction than just like, you know, for lack of a better term, set up punchline type of, you know, things. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen shows or read books where they're introducing a character and you're like, okay, there's something's clearly going to happen to this person. Otherwise, why are we meeting this person? You know, but I think, you know, like you said, with The Walking Dead is more about a drama. It's like, yeah, when you have a long-term story and cast, it's like, okay, once the initial shock of this horror element happens, then what are you stuck with? You're stuck with the people. You're stuck with the human nature of it. And sometimes human nature is scarier than any boogeyman we can come up with. I mean, look at just even innovation over the span of human history. There's two things that we do great at, and it's, you know, creating weapons to kill each other and then creating farming, you know, ways to kill each other, ways to feed each other. Those are really where, you know, we've exceeded. And even there's crisscross applesauce on that one when you have hunting weapons, you know, the same arrow that can bring a deer in to feed everyone, the same one that can kill your enemies or your intended targets if you want. Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, personally, this is just me, but you know, if you don't care about the character, then what's to say someone else is going to care about the character that you're, you know, that they're reading, that you're writing about?
No, 100%, 100%. And not to detract from Killchella, but you've gotten some other books out that have really, really kind of showcased your abilities. And one more recently that I really enjoyed was Fogline.
Mm. Thank you.
And that was a really good comic that, you know, I believe you said you're working on a sequel for that one.
Unofficially, yes.
Unofficially? Okay.
Unofficially, yes.
I could have sworn I saw, I'm sorry, I thought I saw like an update or a tweet somewhere that their discussions were being talked about continuing the story.
Yeah, I mean, I know where I want to take the story.
Okay.
But I'm not the only person in the room. So yeah, okay. The discussions are, you know, ongoing with that to see where we want to go. Thank you for bringing that up. That might be the apex of my writing ability, I think. That's one of those things that, you know, when someone passes away and they say like, oh, known for XYZ, I hope that that's one of my obituary, you know, credits. Fogline, because that's... for people who don't know, Fogline is a story. It's a dramatic piece about an older man in the twilight of his years who is confronted with a true crime podcast that is focusing on the disappearance of someone from the 1980s. Unfortunately, it's someone who he disposed of in the woods after a hit and run accident. So, you know, it's just... It's a face that's in, it's something that's haunted him across his whole life. And to see this unexpectedly pop up like this, and then to get in the backstory, he didn't know who this person was for all these years. It's just a face, but seeing the investigative work that's gone in and seeing backstory and family and the aftermath of what happens with that family, after this disappearance. It just, you know, makes him go into a spiral. That book has gotten some attention from some publishers. I can say that much. I don't know necessarily to bring the book on board, but for us as the creative team and as individuals, that's definitely got us, you know, some goodwill, I think.
That's great to hear because you guys did a fantastic job with that book. It was definitely one of those, again, like Killchella. The premise is like, yes, this makes perfect sense as a really fun premise for a book. And it's obviously delivered on because, again, it was one of my favorite books I've read this past year, probably past couple years. It was really, really, really immersive, really good. And the hook is so good on that book that my wife, who does not read comics just for the fact that she's none have really ever hooked her.
Yeah.
She's like, what's that one? So occasionally, so it, just the fact that it piques her interest enough to be like, where is that? Well, tell me where you're going to leave that one in case I, you know, cause I might want to read that. I'm like, to me, that's like crossover. You got that crossover appeal, of all that. I have kind of seen, like, it feels like ever since you announced the Kickstarter for that book, it feels like everywhere I turn, I'm seeing some sort of other type of media taking on that true crime podcast kind of angle with things.
Yeah.
There's been a couple of movies. There's been a couple of other, I think, other comic premises or books I've seen come out. And, you know, I get it. It's in the zeitgeist because everyone just like loves those true crime podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really into a few of them several years ago, but then after a while, one of them just got so dark where I had to stop because I'm like, this is actively making me depressed and I can't listen to this. There's one, what was it called? Sword and Shield, I think it was called. And they were replaying like 911 tapes. And, you know, like, you know, after a couple of times of hearing someone, you know, basically going through the worst moment of their life with the police about someone they love, it's like, all right, I don't need to hear this. Like this is not entertaining. I don't want this in my ears anymore. So I kind of really fallen away. But even then, like this, the surge of true crime has just got exploded.
Think about how weird that is, right? Like, the darkest moment of your life is entertainment for someone else.
Yeah, and it's just like, it felt really gross to me. And I'm not judging anyone who listens to these things. Just for me, it was like, I can't, like, no. Like, I can't deal with this. This is too much. And, you know, my wife, you know, that internet joke usually of, like, whenever... it's usually some sort of video or something, like whenever like a guy stumbles across his wife's like Bluetooth or something like that, and it's playing like these gnarly descriptions of dead bodies in a podcast or whatever. That's, you know, my wife listens to a bunch of that stuff. I think there's one called, listens to, it's like Makeup and Murder. This woman like does makeup and like talks about, you know, true crime murders and stuff like that. And it's like, there's all these different variations of it. But even then, there's some of those she starts telling me about them. I'm like, no, you got to stop. I don't want to hear it. I can't. Like, I just, there's enough real, like, evil in the world. Like, I just can't, like, that's not for me. This coming from a guy who's drawing, like, 4 horror comics right now. But, you know, my style of, like, scary horror stuff is that schlocky 80s stuff. You know, the emphasis on, like, how gross can we make this? As opposed to, like, how, you know, psychologically scarring can we make this?
I mean, so, yeah, that is the difference, right? I mean, you can, the depths of what humanity can do. One I really like, because I used to listen to Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, which is just, you know, like every episode, it's just random conspiracy theories, or they dive into like real true crime. But it's, you know, like Monster of the Week type stuff. But The Root of Evil was one I really gravitated towards. It follows the George Hodel, Dr. Hodel, from like the 1920s or something in Los Angeles, and how they tie it to him and the Black Dahlia murder. Even though it was never officially proven or anything, they think strong evidence suggests that he was the, you know, culprit behind what happened to, I want to say, Elizabeth Smart.
I don't know that. Okay. Point of reference for the Black Dahlia murders is very, very small. So
okay, but yeah, that was sick and twisted. I mean, it went into like incest babies and all sorts of stuff, and I'm like, what? But there's this house in Los Angeles that I pass by all the time on Franklin, and it turned, and it's just a really weird looking, like an Aztec, you know, ruin type of house, and that's just the architecture that they had back then in the 20s, but. Turns, you know, like they're saying, like that was his house, and that's where they feel that, you know, like Elizabeth Smart was killed before her body was disposed in some random area. And so, like, I passed by that house after I heard that podcast, and I had my wife stop. I was like, "That's the house." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" Like, "Oh, yeah, from the podcast." And I was just thinking, after I stopped, got the car, took a picture of the house. And afterwards, I'm just like, "Why am I glorifying this? This is someone's crime scene."
It's just how the. I think obviously the psychological aspect of everything is, I understand it. Like us as humans, like we need to like, I feel like it's just like everyone just trying to at least rationalize or get comfortable with death in general. And this is just our collective way of like dealing with that. Especially since I think, you know, true crime stuff had like a huge surge during the pandemic and all that. Like we're all like obsessed with death at this point. And this is just kind of our general coping mechanism for it, which, you know, I can understand, you know, but also I'm, it's not for everyone. For sure.
I just dropped a link to in the email. They can't see this in the podcast, but I dropped you in an email, the link to the house. So you can see like everything about the guy is creepy. His house is creepy. Like, I don't know. It's just layers upon layers of just compounding on it. With equal fanfare, I also stopped in front of the Supernatural, not Supernatural, the Charmed house, which was used for in American Horror Story.
Oh, okay. Oh boy. that series, boy, that went off the rails real fast.
Which one? They both kind of did.
American Horror Story, like just the, I guess the overall series for us anyway. It got
I tapped out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rough. But anyway, man, we're going to talk about that. We're talking about you and we're talking about your work. there's one last piece of work that I wanted to bring up, and that's something you kind of mentioned on Twitter that I haven't read it yet, but your debut OGN Ashes. You basically, you know, not to be very blunt about it, but you know, you kind of mentioned you wanted to talk about it and bring it up because you know, it's very important to you and all that. So, you know, I wanted to give you that space to kind of discuss Ashes and all that and see if you know, that I want to learn about it too, because I'm not too familiar with it. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, Ashes is an older work, and that was, for a long time, that was my biggest known comic work. It was my first Kickstarter, so I want to say maybe 2012, 2013. And then 2014, when Z2 was starting out, I met with a couple of people who worked with them, and you know, we started discussions, and I think 2015 or 2016 it came out, and I was an unknown, but of course Ashes is a graphic novel about a firefighter in Brooklyn who suffers an accident on the job and then has to learn to overcome his handicap. It's, I mean, you could definitely tell it's my first graphic novel. Reading it back, I was just like, oh wow, this is, I definitely want to make some changes here and there. But you know, it definitely is the blueprint for a lot of the more dramatic elements that I like to use in my writing going forward. Yeah, that was that. Like I said, that was that book has a special place in my heart. I mean, that was my first graphic novel. That's my first internationally released book. You know, I got a review of Publishers Weekly, which was, you know, it was decent. I wasn't winning Eisners or anything, right? That was my first Kickstarter with Carl Slominski. So that was, you know, a good moment. But also, you know, I had a lot of people coming up at, you know, to me in the years since, and, you know, just giving thanks. You know, it's kind of interesting how, you know, my comic writing career went in a different direction from there, but you can see parallels in my writing style in the years since with that release.
Yeah, well, you know, I think you're probably underselling it a little bit, because to have, you know, your first thing come out and it to be as, I guess, successful as it was, with, you know, you had a successful Kickstarter, you had a publisher pick it up, you got some, you know, like you said, maybe not glowing reviews, but no one panned it, right? Because so, if I look back at my first things, I'm like, that's, you know, people should have like panned this and like told me like, no, this is garbage. What are you doing?
No, I definitely had, I had one review from Newsarama, and I remember that. And I'm just like, I think this guy was having a bad day that day, because he went out of his way to say some colorful words when everyone else kind of gave it, you know, decent stuff.
You know, that's one thing I don't necessarily miss about, because when I was doing my first series, Packs of the Little Country, we were sending it out to a lot of blogs and stuff, and you would get the reviews, and half the time, like, you know, I put so much work into that book, that from the design to the lettering and getting the printing and all that, and just, you know, like two sentences are about the art or whatever, and it was never really anything. It's like, oh yeah, the art's passable, or like,
wow,
oh god.
And, oh jeez,
it was just like, I remember, you know, I try not to take the, you know, or like be antagonistic to anybody about the reviews and all that or whatever, but like, there's like one bad review where I was tagged in it, and the guy was like basically saying like he didn't understand what the cover was about, and I'm like, the cover was clearly representing what's happening in the story, you just didn't read the book. And there's like a long deleted Twitter chain about it, and that site's not even active anymore or whatever, but it was just like, I took the bait, you know, with the review. So I don't necessarily miss that. I don't miss that, but you know, to have some, you know, a book that was at least well received in general, to have a successful Kickstarter and all that, that's yeah, kind of a rarity, especially back in 2012, 2013, you said, like, Kickstarter was still fairly new. Like, you're still really trying to explain what the hell a Kickstarter was to people.
Of course. You know? I mean, it felt like a pioneer back then.
You know, and and all that. So is Ashes available anywhere for anyone to read digitally or anything like that? Or is it kind of one of those books that's not necessarily lost, but just not available at the moment?
I think it might have been lost in the Comixology shuffle of things, but it's still available on Amazon. If you search my name, Mario Candelaria, and search Ashes, you can find some retailers that have copies here and there, secondhand copies. Okay. I don't know if Z2 still has anything. I don't know. All my contacts from that I used to know are no longer there anymore. So I have no relationship with that company outside of just their automated bot follows me and I follow them. Probably shouldn't say that out loud, but whatever. Fuck it. Maybe they still have some. I don't think it's on their website at all, but definitely it's available on Amazon. I know Eastside Mags in New Jersey, great comic shop. Jeff has a few copies that I signed when I did a signing for him there. This is available in Barnes & Noble. It's available in a bunch of shops. I actually did a signing at a Barnes & Noble once, which was weird because they didn't know what to do for a comic book. Which is strange because usually when you have a bookstore signing, it's the writer's going to go up there and read an excerpt and they have chairs set up. I'm just like, I can't read a graphic novel like this unless I do like a show and tell type thing where I read the sign and then just pan the page across the room like a children's book. It's out there. I mean, I think I still have a couple copies if people want to hit me up and get some.
Awesome. You know, and I'll do some quick Googling around, and if I can find some links for everybody, I will put them in the show notes so they can go check it out.
In 2017, Universal Studios announced The Dark Universe, an ambitious project that would see all of their classic movie monsters come together like some kind of horror Avengers. Only one movie was ever made, which bombed so hard they canceled the entire franchise. But what if they hadn't?
On our podcast, Are You Afraid of the Dark Universe, we imagine the connected horror universe that never was. Every week, one of us pitches the other on the next movie in the universe until we grow to Marvel proportions and beyond.
So far, we've tackled Frankenstein, the Wolfman, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and many more, and we're just getting started. Follow along on your favorite podcast app and ask yourself the question, are you afraid of the dark universe?
So we've reached that portion of the episode where it's time for me to ask you five random questions. Mario, are you ready for the shuffle interview?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it.
So as always, I kind of do these beforehand. So they're nice and ready. I pick them. Even though there's like 150 questions this generator can like pull from the numbers, I've had a couple of repeats already. And I'm like, what? So thankfully I haven't had any repeats with this one. So these are five questions I have not asked yet with this interview, and they're actually pretty decent ones, I must say. Just, you know, not to pat myself on the back, just. But without further ado, let's get going. Question number one, which creator do you think holds the biggest influence for you creatively?
All time, I assume, right?
All time.
All time.
Or whatever the top of your head.
Does it have to be comics or can it be external?
External.
Martin Scorsese. I had uncles who made me watch his movies at a very inappropriate age, and it stuck with me ever since. Scorsese definitely as a filmmaker, just, you know, and also the people he teamed up with, the writers he teamed up with to bring stories and showing that level of collaboration. Scorsese is a good influence in their comics. I want to say from a writer, Ed Brubaker. I call him the Wednesday Messiah because everything he does is amazing. And for illustrators, Jim Lee.
All right.
Jim Lee's an OG. I started with his X-Men, and you know, every time he still posts something, I want to check it out.
Not that there's a wrong answer for this, but those are all very, very, you know, solid, firm answers of like, yeah. Definitely. Sure. Like if you're going to have that one person be that main source of influence, that's a good one, I would say.
Mount Rushmore people, right?
Yes, exactly. All right. Second question is, and I think I know the answer to this because you are not a coffee guy. Last time we spoke, you discussed, I believe it was orange juice was your, which is fine. Hey, we take all the comers here. More coffee for the rest of us, as I would say. Mm-hmm. But this question isn't about whether you're enjoying it. I need to know when was the last time you had coffee?
Oh, shit. Excuse my language. Okay, I want to say 3 weeks ago, I was in the car with my wife, and we had two cups in the cup holder, and I picked hers up. She had coffee, and I took a sip, and immediately I was like, what the fuck is this? And I spit it out. It took all my willpower not to spit it back into the straw for her drink, so I kind of, you know, did the thing. But yeah, that was the last time I had coffee, about 2 weeks ago, I think. Thanksgiving time, right? That was about 2 weeks ago? Yeah.
Yeah,
accidental coffee. It happens.
It's a lot sooner than I would have expected. I would have expected a years ago type answer. So
it's, you know,
the accidental coffee.
Every time I can think of having coffee, it's always an accident. It's never like, it's like I grab a drink, I think it's mine, and I'm like, oh no, what is this?
Question number three: what's a tool, software, or device that changed how you work for the better?
Ooh. Okay. All right. I'm a big tech guy, so this is actually a really, really great question I was not prepared for.
Yeah, when this popped up, I'm like, oh, Mario's got something this, I'm sure.
Okay. So I'm going to have to go ahead and say the cloud-based Office Docs, not just Microsoft, but also Google and stuff. That changed how I write and where I write my comics. Like I said, I hope no one from the office is listening to this, but you know, I can log on to my Google account at work, pull up the same file, right? Make changes right there. Or if I think of something, put it in. I don't even have to hit save. I could just close it out. The cloud saves it. And then when I come home, that file is still open and you will still see the change that I made then. Cloud-based, you know, real world saving like that, especially if you're sharing a screen with someone or sharing a document, you can see, like a co-writer, you can see where they are and what they're typing, and they can see the same thing. I mean, it's just that level of collaboration wasn't quite there when I was starting to work out in comics. Yeah, that's my pick. It's just, you know, the cloud-based documentation.
That's a good one. That's a really, really good one. I have to agree to a certain aspect, to a certain point. Like, that's just the simplest thing you would think it is. It's just, but it's so handy. Like, I've used, you know, the Google Docs and Google Sheets things to make so many, like the list that this question, these questions are on, they were compiled, you know, when I was at home, when I was out and about, you know, using voice to text, just like, just all these, and just whenever I just thought of a different question, like that would be going on the list, just dropped it down and it was there. I mean, it is incredibly, incredibly convenient. So awesome. Yeah, that's. It seems like too simple of an answer, but it's often the simplest things are, you know, the most helpful, I guess.
I mean, I used to email myself a Word file.
Yeah.
So like wherever I was, I opened my email and do it. I used to have a thumb drive I would bring on a keychain and have a script on there and just start working at it if I was at home, if I was at work. But having that cloud base, especially when it comes to sharing or collaboration, I mean, that's it's game changer.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Awesome. All right, question number four. What's your favorite cover gimmick?
What do you mean? Like a trope, something you see?
Yeah, like just like, you know, we're both, you know, I think we're similarly aged, right? And yeah, we both had those 90s experiences of the crazy ass variant, you know, or diecast, chroma, whatever, holofoil covers and all that. So yeah, that's what I mean by gimmick. Like, what's, you know, the silliest thing or the best thing, I see.
What was it in the early to mid 90s where it was kind of like popped out? I don't think that's embossed, but you know, like,
I think it was a foil embossed, I think they called it, foil embossed cover.
I remember X Factor number 100 specifically, I would put a piece of paper down, take a pencil and just lightly just, you know, hit it so that way I can get the outline of it, of Havoc holding multiple man's multiple time dead body. I think that, you know, just childhood memory based, that's probably my favorite. I think all time now as an adult is probably the sketch variant.
That's a good one.
Cause you could, I mean, it's a twofer, right? Cause you're going to have the final version as one, but then you can take the in-process version and double your, you know, not double your profit margin, but add an additional revenue to help, you know, build out sales and also offer some, you know, some more technical behind the scenes look at a product.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
Did you ever see the Ultimates 2 number one, sketch variant?
No, I don't think I have. Or maybe I have. I'm just not sure.
The whole comic was Hitch's pencils.
I'm pretty sure I've had to have seen that because there was when I had a long gap in between reading comics and all that, and when I came back, the Ultimates Volume 1 and Volume 2 were two things that, you know, kind of brought me back.
Yeah.
Full on. So I'm pretty sure I seem to remember like around that because it was like when the second volume of the Ultimates like just was just collected. So I think that's when like that sketch variant kind of stuff was happening. So I'm pretty sure I've seen it around, just not in person, but I'm sure it's a beautiful thing to behold. Like just really, really. Great.
Imagine the whole comic being the pencils, sketch. You know, that's unheard of usually.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and Hitch definitely put the work in on that book for sure. That like massive, was that the first volume? They did that massive like gatefold out spread.
Okay. Yeah. I want to say yes.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just, he kind of like, Hitch kind of like ruined it for everybody after that. Cause for the longest time, I think it was, everyone had to like do or make it look like they're doing that much work in the books before people finally started like cooling off with like, you know, not expecting that much of artists because Hitch is a madman. You know what? I'm going to give you a bonus question. What's your least favorite cover gimmick?
That's a really good question. I don't really try to think negatively like that.
Well, what do you think about it? I'm bringing it up and out of selfish reasons because this popped into my brain and I need to bitch about it. But a while ago, DC did these, it was around the new 52-ish, I think, but they did these like lenticular covers or whatever. But the texture on them, it made my teeth hurt when I touched it.
Like, are you biting it? What's happening here?
It just like, it was like this like ribbed texture on there or something. Just something about like when I'd grab the comic, it just like would just like, it would just bug the shit out of me. Holding on to it, maybe that's a sensory thing I'm dealing with, but like it was like no thank you, I don't like this.
Okay, all right, so using that as a basis, I have to say I don't like the themed months. That's gonna probably get me some bad points, but when it's not the months like holiday stuff, but like where it has nothing to do with anything. All the Spawn comics that are coming out now, which is, you know, great for, you know, those creators who are getting the job on there. But every issue that is coming out from Image that month has a Spawn cover. I mean, that it doesn't move the needle for me.
Yeah.
It's what I'm trying to really say.
I totally get that because it is, by all intents and purposes, the definition of gimmick. Like there's no real redeeming quality to it aside from like maybe some cool images and all that. And while I'm not here to harsh on anyone's fun who really enjoys those things, please do enjoy them. But it definitely feels like this, as someone who, you know, went through the comics of the 90s, and seeing all the gimmicks and the variants and the things that caused that was that weird speculative downfall of comics. Like this just hits a little too close to that.
Yeah.
Like there's certain theme months where I'm like, yes, please do something, you know, like, you know, the Pride months, you know, or Hispanic Heritage months, as long as, you know, Green Lantern's not holding a fucking bag of tamales. It's just like, you know, oh God. So
tell me why you're mad though. No, I'm just kidding.
I think everyone else, like, Again, not to segue too hard out of it, but like just that particular cover, like even the artist himself was like, yeah, that's not the final cover. But even then, the fact that like it was out there in some form, and I was bitching about it, and then I thought like, no, this is too stupid to be real. I'm going to take down these tweets about it or whatever. And no, it was real. Thankfully, they ponied up and they got the proper good looking cover with the proper reference on there. But yeah, the intent of those theme months, yes, I'm all for those. But when it's like, yeah, Spawn month, it's like, I hope those independent creators that those book covers are going to be on those books, they get a bump and hopefully they get some new readers, but it historically doesn't really work that way. So it just kind of feels like cash grab, and I'm a little, I guess, mentally or suspicious of that type of situation. You know, considering, again, you know, I was a kid, you know, I was a teenager in the 90s when like Marvel filed for bankruptcy and all that. And that was like weird times. So yeah, I see what you mean there with the theme month things. It just, a lot of them are just really, you know, greed, which, you know, capitalism, it is what it is, I guess.
It's sad that it is what it is, but you know, here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's end on a high note.
Okay.
What's the best independent comic book you've ever read?
Does Vertigo count as independent, even though it's owned by DC?
You know what? I'll allow it because they were allowed a lot of their own. They were pretty much allowed to do their thing. I think Karen Berger ran a tight ship with like letting people be themselves and do their thing. So. Yeah,
okay.
I'll say so.
I gotta Google this one a lot. I forgot the guy. Oh yeah, duh. Okay. It's The Alcoholic, which is a graphic novel by writer Jonathan Ames, novelist Jonathan Ames, and I think Ian Haskell did the art on that. Jonathan Ames is kind of semi-autobiographical, but it's just, you know, the guy struggles with alcoholism. It hits all the dramatic points, you know, from comedic moments all the way to stressful, what the fuck am I doing type, you know, stuff. I mean, it's old now. I think it's definitely over 10 years old because I own the 10-year anniversary edition. But yeah, that was one of the first books as a young adult I got that showed me what comics could be instead of just your typical, you know, big splash beat 'em ups or your, you know, marquee Kirkman stuff.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a great answer. I've heard that book talked about a lot, and I my memory may be crossed here, but didn't Jonathan Ames, didn't he have a show?
Yep.
About a cartoon?
He did.
Was that the one with Zach Galifianakis, or not Zach Galifianakis? Yeah, Jason Schwartzman. Yeah.
I was actually on that show.
Oh, were you?
Well, there you go. After the book came out, I saw. It's funny. Before I was a real comic creator, I played one on TV. Bored to Death season 2 finale. You could find me sitting at a table at a comic convention as someone's gonna get murdered.
nice, there you go. Full circle, right?
Yeah. Gotta awesome. Love it.
Awesome. Well, Mario, thank you so much for coming on and answering those questions and for being once again a fantastic guest. Now is the time to let everybody know where they can find you online, and I'll make sure there are links in the show notes below.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at The Other Mario C. My website, of course, is theothermarioc.com, where you can find, I try to link, you know, podcasts such as this, reviews, interviews, but I also have links and previews of my comics on there, as well as a short film that I worked on. Just, you know, your general information and newsletter link. Instagram is Another Mario C, but that's just, you know, that's just fun photos. That's kind of more personal. So I don't know if that's a good business one, but if you want to get a good look behind the scenes of, you know, my random crap that I post, there it is. Hive doesn't allow links, but I am on there whenever they come back at The Other Mario C.
Yeah. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. You know, I like their vibe. So I'm hoping they get it together and come back, but. I've definitely was very hesitant to jump onto another social media, but enough good people were like, jumping over to Vibe and to Hive and talking about it to where I gave it a shot. So we'll see, I guess. I've already like kind of pulled back way back my Twitter usage anyway. So it's like, you know, probably a good thing, but, but yeah,
I want to, but I can't cause I got to promote stuff.
Yeah. I got the next like 6 months for me are going to be like insane. So it's like, maybe this is, has to be a calm before the storm because I have to jump right back into this massive promo mode for a bunch of things. But that's about me, and we're not about me, we're about you. So, Mario, once again, thanks for coming on. I'll make sure it's all linked up in the show notes. Then go check everything out, and thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks for having me.